Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
It's time to talk about jersey numbers in the NFL again, and we're going to go back to jersey number 79 and the greatest players that ever wore that jersey in 101 years of pro football history. And Larry Schmidt of Big Blue Interactive and Gridiron Uniform Database is up next in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. We have a great bonus edition today. Football by numbers. We are at jersey number 79, the last number of the big men. And boy, what a journey it's been going through here. But today we have a special guest, one of our fellow guests that we had early on in the series, Larry Schmidt from Big Blue Interactive. You've probably seen him, a Gridiron Uniform Database. Now he's Giants television he's been on. Larry Schmidt, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Thanks for having me back, Darren.
Larry, this is exciting having you back on here. We're getting really close to the football season, and a lot of things are happening here. And I know before we came on, you mentioned the Gridiron Uniform Database. You guys are gearing up for the 2021 season with uniform changes, and maybe like to talk about that and anything else you got going on.
Yeah, sure. It's a busy time of year, and you know, we're putting in new uniforms. You know, just this past week, the Packers did their unveiling of their throwback uniform this year, and there's several others. And you know, the Giants surprisingly snuck one in on me that I had no idea was coming. You know, they're changing the pants on their away uniforms. No more gray. In fact,
you mean the Maras didn't consult with you first?
Can you believe it? I mean, come on. No. And by the way, I love the gray pants, and I'm not happy. They've actually, I was going through the new edition of the NFL Record and Factbook, which came out last week, and the Giants have actually eliminated gray as an official team color. They're now just blue, red, and white.
Oh, but, okay. You know,
I find disappointing. I like the gray pants, so it's going to be all red and white and blue and white.
Well, very patriotic.
Yeah, it is. It is. Be nice to have a little gray in there too, other than the face mask.
But right. We'll see.
They will wear the gray pants once, as it's funny. This year is the 10th anniversary of their last Super Bowl win, when they beat the Patriots for the second time in 2011, and they're actually going to wear that uniform once as a throwback, which is strange. Like, they wore that uniform last year, and now it's a throwback.
Wow, you mean the David Tyree helmet catches a decade ago? Wow,
time goes by. No, fast. It's actually the one after that. That one was 14 years ago.
Oh wow,
yeah, 2011. That was the Victor Cruz season.
Okay,
Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks. So that, you know, when Ahmad Bradshaw fell into the end zone rear end first and accidentally scored a touchdown 10 years ago. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Wow. Time whips right by, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay. I know you want to talk a little bit about the numbers of the NFL in general, and maybe give our listeners some insight into that from the perspective of the uniform.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the list of players we have today is probably going to be a little more recent vintage. You know, when you had me on, when we did numbers 1 and 7, we were talking about Ray Flaherty and Mel Hine and great, you know, that's the area I love researching most, the 20s, 30s, 40s. But in that era, it really wasn't common for players to wear a number like 79. It was very, very rare. part of Red Grange's notoriety, apart from being, this electrifying college player, was he wore number 77, and nobody did that. He might've been the first. And it was, so it's very akin to say, Wayne Gretzky wearing number 99 in the 1980s in hockey. Like, he was a great player and he was exciting and he scored a ton of goals, but like nobody wore 99, nobody. So, Red Grange and 77 were synonymous, but typically I was going through my data and, like, for instance, 1925, the Giants were numbered 0 through 25. Nobody wore a number higher than 25. And, that's just, they numbered the guys, 1, 2, 3, 4. And it was single platoon football. They played both sides of the ball and there was no numbering system in the NFL until 1952. And as you go through the 20s and the 30s, the Giants had, they put number 55 in issue for Steve Owen. So they kept that one active, but it wasn't until 1945 when they had a player wear a number as high as 70. And it wasn't until 1947 when they had a player wear number 90. So, you're not going to hear any names or, from anyone who played, before World War II. And it was the All-America Conference that really used almost the full, they didn't use the complete number spectrum, but they had a lot of high numbers because the way that they set it up was that centers wore number 20 through 29, guards wore 30 through 39, tackles were 40 to 49, ends were 50 to 59, quarterbacks 60 to 69, fullbacks 70 to 79, and halfbacks 80 through 99. So they had 19 numbers that they could pick from. But when you look at All-America Conference, photos or films, you're not going to see any single digit numbers and you're not going to see any teens. The lowest number that they issued was number 20. So that's why when you see photographs of, Otto Graham throwing the football and he's wearing number 60, that's a lineman's number. Well, not in the All-America Conference. It wasn't. Quarterbacks were 60 to 69. And Marion Motley, the fullback, he wore 76. So when the Browns, the 49ers and the Colts were merged into the NFL in 1950, there was a big mashup of numbers all over the place. And after the 1951 season, the NFL, said, all right, we need to establish a little order to this. And they came up with the first numbering system, which is, very similar to what, we're going to see this year. Although, over the years in the 70s, they made some refinements and then in the 90s, and then they made a few more this year. But basically what they set up in 1952 is, what you have today, quarterbacks and kickers 1 through 19, backs 20s and 30s and 40s, linemen between 60 and 79, et cetera.
I'm an ex-official for high school. So I know we were always trained, 50 through 79. Those are your interior linemen. They can't go out for a pass in the high school realm, that even if they're on the end. So that was always a good measuring stick for us to know who our eligibles were. And besides position, just a quick glance. So if you see somebody, if an umpire who's in a defensive backfield sees somebody 50 through 79, shooting past them, okay, there's probably dropping a hanky on that for ineligible downfield. So there's some little quirks to it that help from the officiating side of things also.
Right. Yeah. I remember, in the 70s and the 80s, centers on the offensive side were allowed to have 50 through 59, but at some point it must have been in the 90s, they phased out 50s for offensive linemen. Probably around the time they allowed linebackers, because it used to be linebackers were 50 through 59, but then it was in the 90s, I think they allowed linebackers to wear 90s, 90 through 99. So that's probably when they took it away from 50s away from centers.
Yeah, I think this is going to be interesting these next couple of years when we see receivers out, wearing like the college game 11 and number 2, wearing quarterback numbers.
I'm still not used to seeing, wide receivers in the teens, and now they're getting single digits. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I know the college game does it. Yeah. They do it pretty successfully. So as long as they keep those interior linemen, I think those are the most key numbers to keep locked into, right? That 50 to 79
ineligible receiver downfield.
right. So that'll help out. And that helps the fans watching too, from the sideline view that we usually get on television. That'll help us too. So that's a good thing. All right. Well, we have some great players to talk about here that were the Jersey 79s. And I was kind of surprised, and probably a lot of it has to do with what you said, you know, that 1952 number rule change. But there are only three players that the Pro Football Hall of Fame recognizes were Jersey number 79 that are in the Hall of Fame. And those players are Forrest Gregg, Rosie Brown, and Bob St. Clair. And I don't think I missed any on there. Did you have any more on your end? Okay.
Nope, that's it. And Forrest Gregg gets an asterisk. I'm sure you already talked about him for number 75.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we did. We did. And he only wore the jersey number 79 for one season. But, sometimes we take that in consideration. But sometimes when they're a great player, which you could probably put Forrest Gregg in that category, he may be one of the top, 79s also. So we're not opposed to doing that if that's the way it pans out.
Yep, he definitely. Oh, let's start with Forrest Gregg. We know the career he had with Green Bay. Seven times he was all pro. He's one of only four players in history to win six NFL titles. And three of them were actually teammates of him with the Packers, where they won five. It was Herb Adderley was one. He was also with Gregg with the Cowboys in 1971. So that was their sixth. And Fuzzy Thurston, who was on five of the Packers teams, also won an NFL title with the Baltimore Colts in 1958. And then, of course, the fourth everybody knows is Tom Brady.
Oh, who's that? Never heard of him.
I don't know. So, and I'm in Connecticut. I border Massachusetts. I don't know. Who is that guy? I've never heard. So Forrest Gregg, obviously, for all those great Packer years, he wore number 75. He wore 79 with Dallas for that 1 year in 1971. And he only played, I think, six games that year. But Tom Landry loved Forrest Gregg, and he wanted him to be on his Cowboy team because he liked his maturity and professionalism and, everything he brought to the locker room. He felt like he could be like a coach on the field. And, obviously Forrest Gregg became a head coach later on. And he considered Forrest Gregg to be a very positive influence on the Cowboys in 1971. That was the first year that they won their Super Bowl.
He was definitely a great player and really set the standards for his positions that he played. And, we are still talking about him to this day, from some of his aspects of what he did on the field. And, great well, player.
When someone like Vince Lombardi says he was the finest player I ever coached, you got to pay attention to that.
I was fortunate enough. I got to go to Canton a couple weeks ago during the enshrinement weekends, which is the largest enshrinement they ever had because of having two classes going in.
Right.
And I got to be there from the aspect of the media. So I was there with a media pass, and just how many people were talking still about, some of these older players, Forrest Gregg and, some of those great Packers teams. It's I don't think there was any of them that were going in to those weekends, but still there was quite a buzz about those guys. Half a century or more later, they're still being talked about.
That's why we have the Hall of Fame. So these old players from the past, they aren't forgotten. That's what makes it great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
History lives on.
Yeah. So I would say, probably, I don't know how you feel about, but even though you only had one season, I would probably put him on a top 10 list still of greatest number 79s.
Oh, well,
or do you want, or we can wait. We can wait till the end if you like.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Let's wait till the end. All right. Okay. Do we want to talk about the other Hall of Famers as long as we're on the tracker?
Let's go with Bob St. Clair because with the 49ers, he's someone who's not only in the, he's in the Hall of Fame. He's on the all decade team for the 1950s and the 49ers retired number 79 in his honor.
Just a tremendous guy, a great tackle, but you don't see a lot of statistics for these offensive linemen. They don't get the love and the stat columns that some of the defenders and the offensive linemen.
Anonymity.
Right. That's for sure. That's for sure.
An offensive lineman is doing his job when you don't hear his name called.
Yeah.
He's not getting called for a holding or an eligible receiver downfield. When you don't hear a guy's name on the offensive line, he's probably doing a good job.
Very true. Very true indeed. But 11 seasons we're in the 79, making the Hall of Fame, you know, 1953 through 1963 was his years we're in 79. So
yep. just another tremendous player. Five times, and he played in five Pro Bowls. And most interestingly, which I wasn't aware of this, he may be the only player that we're going to talk about who served in public office during his playing career, because he was a native San Franciscan. He played high school football in San Francisco. He played most of his college football in San Francisco. He did transfer, I think it was his senior year, to Tulsa. But while he was playing for the 49ers, it was in the late 50s, he, during the offseason, was working in the public office. But during the 1961 and 1962, he was actually the mayor of San Francisco while he was playing for the 49ers.
No kidding. Wow. I did not know that.
I didn't know it either until I read it this week while I was doing my research. I'm like, how do we not know this?
Yeah. Wow. Very interesting. All right. Great player. Rosie Brown, we might as well bring up his name too. Another great tackle that played in the NFL.
Roosevelt Brown, he played for the Giants from 1953 through 1965, and he was the left tackle all those seasons. He was all pro six times. He played in nine Pro Bowls. He was the NFL's lineman of the year in 1956, which was also the year that Frank Gifford was the NFL's MVP. And Frank Gifford said, you know, he attributed most of his on-field success to Roosevelt Brown because he used to get a lot of his great runs and he would throw option passes behind Roosevelt Brown. He's on the 1950s All-Decade team, and he's on the NFL's 75th and 100th anniversary teams.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big man for his time, even though, I mean, he's listed 6'3", 255 pounds when he played in the NFL. But that was a large man at the time. I know he was probably a linebacker or a fullback these days.
Sam Huff said he would have been a great fullback or tight end if he wanted to be. Because not only was he huge, he had like these gigantic shoulders and he had this V-shaped body. But he only had, even late in his career, 1964, he only had a 29-inch waist. So he was very fast. He was very agile and athletic. When Vince Lombardi took over the Giants offense in 1954, he made Roosevelt Brown the first pulling tackle in the NFL. You know, prior to that, only guards pulled. But Roosevelt Brown was so fast, he could get from the left side of the line to the right side almost as, you know, he could be there ahead of the running back before he had the ball.
I don't think I've ever heard of somebody being 255 pounds and having a 29-inch waist. That's unbelievable.
I know. Yeah. And, you know, he also was on the Giants kickoff coverage because he was one of the fastest guys on the team. He could get downfield and he could cover the kickoffs. He was, you know, almost as fast as one of the gunners.
Jeez.
And he played defense. He played goal line defense in short yardage because, you know, they had – smaller rosters in the 50s and everybody pulled double duty. You know, Sam Huff would cover punts, but they had Roosevelt Brown, short yardage and goal line defense. He would normally line up, you know, in the center, you know, we call it nose tackle today in the 3-4, but he would line up directly over the center, short yardage and goal line.
Yeah. Didn't they call it like center guard or something back then? I think
it would depend. Middle guard. In the diamond defense. I think they called it the diamond position, but yeah, he would line up directly over the center, right on the line of scrimmage. And he actually, you know, in the later 50s, once the NFL, you know, TV began to become popular, you can find newspaper articles of him, you know, in AP around the country that would talk about him being an offensive lineman who would play defense and special teams. He wasn't like a two-way player, a single platoon in the 30s and 40s, but he played, you know, some significant minutes, you know, on defense and special teams, in addition to being the starting left tackle.
Huh. Okay. Very interesting. All right. So that rounds out our three Hall of Famers, but there's some great players that I'm going to say are not yet in the Hall of Fame. Cause I think a few of these guys we might be seeing in Canton in a year real soon here.
I agree. I think we have a couple.
Yeah. So maybe if you want to go down that road or whatever road you want to go down, if you want to.
Sure. Sure. I'd like to start with our other retired number 79, Jim Lee Hunt. who played for the Boston Patriots from 1960 through 1970. And he is one of only 20 players who played in all 10 seasons of the AFL. And he played, he was all pro once, played in four AFL All-Star games. And he's tied for the record of most fumble recoveries. I'm sorry, he holds the AFL record for most career fumble recoveries.
Wow, very interesting. Okay, and his number is retired then, you said, huh?
So Patriots retired at 79. So we have two retired 79s, Jim Lee Hunt and Bob St. Clair.
Nice, okay. All right, very interesting player there. How about who would you like to go to next?
We have Harvey Martin, who played for the Dallas Cowboys 1973 through 1983. His biggest season by far was 1977. He was all pro. He was the AP Defensive Player of the Year. And he's was co-MVP of Super Bowl XII with Randy White. They did a good job of making Craig Morton miserable that day.
Yeah, I can remember that. He was quite a player.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he had like 1,000 career sacks of Phil Sims.
Yeah,
he ruined a lot of Sundays for me being a Giants fan.
Yeah, he almost ruined a couple Super Bowls for me too. He was him and his cohorts. They were some good defenses they had, the doomsday defenses.
Yeah, they sure did. They sure did. And he played in four Pro Bowls.
Wow. Okay. Great. All right. Who would you like to go to next?
We have Marvin Powell. He was an offensive tackle for the Jets from 1977 through 1985. And he's a three-time All-Pro player. He played in five Pro Bowls. He's one of the offensive linemen who toiled in anonymity. There's not a lot of – there's no statistics, not a lot of information to find out on him. So, you know, the Jets mostly had mediocre teams. They had some good teams in the 1980s that made the playoffs. The Jets had a good run in 82. You know, that year, Freeman McNeil, it was a strike-shortened year. Freeman McNeil led the NFL in rushing. And, you know, a lot of that had to do with Marvin Powell opening up holes for him, and they had that good playoff run.
Yeah, and he also got to wear the creamsicle jerseys at the end of his career with Tampa Bay.
That's right, 2 years with Tampa Bay, but he did change numbers. He was number 74 in that nice creamsicle orange.
Yeah, correct.
But he wore 79 for his time with the Jets.
Yeah, those creamsicles, those are one of the uniforms, either you love it or you hate it. I don't know anybody in between. You know, I love it too.
You know, when Tampa Bay was switching uniforms last year, I had my fingers crossed. I'm like, bring back Bucko Bruce.
There you go.
I like them much better. I'm not a fan of the pewter. I like the creamsicles.
Yeah, that was the their color scheme now is nice. I can't say I'm against it, but creamsicles are just so different.
They were the best.
They're outstanding. Definitely a sign of the times of the 70s when they came to be as a franchise.
Those uniforms scream 1976, don't they?
Right. Yeah, most definitely they do. They do. Okay. Which direction would you like to go next?
We'll just keep going chronological. Okay. I have Ross Browner. He was a defensive end for the Cincinnati Bengals, 1978 through 1986. He's the brother of a Hall of Famer, Joey Browner. He played safety for the Vikings. And Ross Browner set, you know, at the time it was a record, 1981. He set the Super Bowl record for most tackles in a game. That was Super Bowl 16 against San Francisco. He had 10 tackles, and he had the game's only sack. And also, interestingly, in 1985, he played almost 12 months of football. He left after finishing the 84 season with the Bengals, he jumped to the USFL and played a full season, an 18-game season with the Houston Gamblers. He also wore number 79 with Houston. I looked him up on a Google image search. I found him wearing number 79 in the USFL. The USFL season ended. He went to training camp with Cincinnati, and he played with the Bengals in 1985.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that's probably more than 12 months he played. Then three straight seasons.
Is that insane? And yeah. I'm sure he was very happy to have an off season.
Yeah, I couldn't wait to go on vacation.
Some rest.
All right.
He was obviously a very durable player.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, and who comes up next on our list?
I have Jacob Green from the Seattle Seahawks. He was a defensive end 1980 through 1981. He played in two Pro Bowls. And when he retired from the Seahawks, he was number three on their all-time in NFL sacks with 97 and a half. He trailed only Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor.
Wow. So for the whole NFL, not just for the Seahawks.
NFL, yep. Seahawks, wow, all-time leader and third all-time at the time. It was further down that list today, of course.
Right, and, but it's still a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And he played one season with the 49ers in 92, but he switched his jersey number and he wore 76 with them.
Okay. All right. And who would our next player be that we want to discuss?
I have Bob Golic. He played with the Patriots. He didn't wear 79 with the Patriots because he was a linebacker. He wore number 51 from 79 through 81. Then when he joined Cleveland in 82, they moved him from inside linebacker to nose tackle. So that was when he put on our number 79. And he played three consecutive Pro Bowls with the Browns from 85 through 87. And then he joined the Los Angeles Raiders in 1990, finished out his career there up through 92, and he continued to wear number 79. And he's also, when we have a couple of brothers in the 79, he's also the brother of Mike Golic.
Yeah. Bob was Mike, was Mike that was with ESPN with the radio for quite a few years, right? Okay. And he had a son that played in the NFL just a few years ago. I know he was with the Steelers for like a season or two.
That's right.
So out of Notre Dame. So, all right. Great player. All right. And who next?
We have Ray Childress. He was a defensive end and defensive tackle with the Houston Oilers. He played from 1985 through 1995 with Houston. He was an All-Pro in 1992. He played in five Pro Bowls, and he retired as the Oilers' all-time leader in career sacks. And he shares the NFL record with three fumble recoveries in a single game, which he did in 1988 against the Redskins.
Wow, that is impressive. You know, some players don't get three fumble recoveries in their career. One game.
Pretty he had a nose deal. For the ball. I think he had seven recoveries that season in 88, which led the league.
Yeah, no wonder I remember him. He was a pain in the ass, too, being in that AFC Central.
That's right, AFC Central.
Yeah.
And he ended his career with Dallas. He played 1 year in 1996, but he switched to number 72 that year.
Yeah, great player. Great player. When I say pain in the ass, it's fondly because I mean, he was good.
I know.
Yeah, he was good.
Harvey Martin, he was a pain in the ass too.
Right. I hear you. All right. What player would we like to talk about next?
I have Bill Frelick. And, you said as we were getting started, mentioning players who one day soon we think would be in the Hall of Fame. This would be the guy at the top of my list, Bill Frelick. He was a guard for the Atlanta Falcons from 1985 through 1992. He's on the all 1980s team. He was an All-Pro twice, played in four Pro Bowls, 86 through 89. He was a fantastic run blocker. You know, the Falcons had a lot of 1,000-yard rushers in the 80s, and a lot of that had to do with Bill Frelick opening up holes and clearing the way. And he doesn't have his number retired in the NFL, but his college team, the Pitt Panthers, retired his number 79.
Yeah. And I got to meet Frelick a couple times because Pitt used to practice in my hometown of Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. They'd have their spring training up there before the season. And it was kind of a neat thing. We would go down at the college. I lived right by the college. I could go down there. And that's actually where I attended school later on. But you go down there and play racquetball or use the gym at the Macomb Fieldhouse in Edinburgh. That's where Pitt players would dress to go out. So they would pass by us all the time and you'd get to see him. So I didn't, sit there and talk to him, but I crouched in a corner as all these giants walked past me, going out to their practice field. So Yeah.
Well, the next time you see him, say, hey, when are you getting into Canton?
Right. Absolutely. But yeah, he's still revered a lot in the Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania area for his great play at Pitt.
Yeah, and he was a great player. And yeah. he did play one season, 1993, with the Detroit Lions.
Yes, he did. All right. Okay. Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think we'll see him very soon in Canton. I hope.
For some reason, the Hall of Fame has a bias against guards. They have a lot of centers and a lot of tackles. They don't have too many guards. You know, you got to fill out that. You need those guys in between. You need a couple of guards in there.
Well, we got a couple in this year. Alan Faneca, the Steelers, went in this year.
Yeah.
I think there might have been another
guard. He was the first one in a while.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of tackles. Those are the glamour positions, are the tackles and centers. The guards are sort of that forgotten guy in between.
Right, but they do so much of the dirty work that lets the other guys get recognized.
Right. You know, if the tackle or the center is having trouble with their guy, who's there to help him? The guard.
Yeah.
You know,
who's protecting the A gap? The guard.
That's where the double team comes. It's always the guards involved in the double team, right? So I agree with you. We need to have more guards in Canton. So we'll have to see what we can do about that. Okay. Where do you want to go next?
We'll stick with the offensive line. I have Eric Williams, who was a tackle for the Dallas Cowboys from 1991 through 2000. He's a three-time All-Pro, played in four Pro Bowls. And, you know, he could be another one of those guys who might be in Canton one day. He was Emmitt Smith, the NFL's all-time leading rusher. Eric Williams was no small part of that.
Yeah, most definitely. I used to watch, I'm not a Dallas fan, but I did watch Dallas, especially their offensive line back in that era, because one of my high school guys I graduated with, Mark Stepnoski, was a center during those great teams of the 90s. So we followed them quite a bit up here because he was a great all-pro himself.
He was. Then, I watched the Cowboys a lot, being a Giant fan in that era, and they were just a machine. And, he'd actually his rookie year, he was playing at guard, but it was in 1992 when the Cowboys shifted their offensive line. Nate Newton had been the starting right tackle. They moved Newton into guard, and they put Eric Williams at right tackle. And, 92, that was the year they won their first of three Super Bowls. And he held that spot. And then he played with Dallas through 2000. He finished his career with one season with the Baltimore Ravens. But he switched his number to 73 that year.
Okay. Yeah, he was another one that the Super Bowl, the third time that the Steelers and the Cowboys met, Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson were the coaches. That's when Larry Brown had the two interceptions. But I can remember, Eric Williams and that big offensive line for Dallas just nullified by Steelers defensive line. Right. It was pretty stout itself. He had even the linebackers were big, LeVon Kirkland. And, he was like almost a 300-pounder himself playing backer. But those big boys with the stars on their helmet, they were tough to defend against. That's for sure.
Sure.
Okay.
So for our last player, I have Reuben Brown. He was another guard. He played most of his career with the Buffalo Bills from 1995 through 2003. And he was the epitome of consistency. He was voted to eight consecutive Pro Bowls from 1996 through 2003. And is one of the, one of the great Bills. And he continued to have a good career after he was finished in Buffalo. He played with the Bears from 2004 through 2007. And he made another Pro Bowl in Chicago, but he did, he changed his number to 74 for his 3 years with the Bears, or 4 years with the Bears.
All right. Those are some great players that you have on there. And so I think do we want to go into deliberations now and try to figure out who maybe are the top 10 of these players?
Well, I already mentioned a couple. Top 10, I have Bill Frelick and Eric Williams are both great players. Harvey Martin was a great player. Jim Lee Hunt, Forrest Gregg, even though he only wore 79 for 1 year, I guess we can include him, but I'm sure he's no doubt I'm in the top 10 for number 75. Bob St. Clair, Roosevelt Brown, one of the best, left tackles that ever played.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so is that 10 that you mentioned? One, two, right here.
I lost count.
Five.
It was at least seven.
Six, seven,
I think.
Eight, 9, 10, 11, 12. We have 13 is what I showed that we talked about here. So and let me just go through the names real quick here. Sure. Just to refresh everybody. So I have Forrest Gregg, Rosie Brown, Bob St. Clair, Jim Lee Hunt, Ross Browner, Ray Childress, Jacob Green, Harvey Martin, Marvin Powell, Bob Golic, Eric Williams, Ruben Brown, and Bill Frelick.
Those are a lot of good players. Like, you know, maybe I'll have to trim Forrest Gregg only because he only wore 79 for like 5 games for one season. And I know he's a great 75, so that's not a slight on Forrest. He's clearly one of the best players. You know, Vince Lombardi said he's the finest player he ever coached. I don't doubt that, but I'm just going to categorize him with 75 because that's the number he wore for Vince Lombardi.
Fair enough. Okay.
So Roosevelt Brown, you know, the 279s that are retired, Bob St. Clair, Jim Lee Hunt, Bill Frelick, 79 is retired for the Pitt Panthers. I got to go with that. You know, Harvey Martin, player of the year, Super Bowl MVP. Bill Frelick and Ruben Brown. I got to go with the two guards. There's a lot of Pro Bowls right there with the guards. Eric Williams is a great player. Jacob Green, he retired number 3 all-time in sacks. You got to have him on there.
Right.
Ross Browner, both, you know, most Super Bowl tackles at the time. He had the only sack of the game. He sacked Joe Montana. He's got to be a great player. And I think I'd go with Marvin Powell, another guy who was kind of, he had 3 times All-Pro, 5 Pro Bowls. Not a lot of notoriety, but he was I watched a lot of Jet games in that era, and he was a very, very good player. So I would pick him.
Okay. And I think I have 9, but did you say Ray Childress? Is that one of the ones you
just... Ray Childress. Yes.
Okay. So that's the 10th one I'm missing. All right. So I have in our top 10, no particular order, Rosie Brown, Bob St. Clair, Jim Lee Hunt, Ross Browner, Ray Childress, Jacob Green, Harvey Martin, Marvin Powell, and Ruben Brown, and Bill Frelick. That's our 10. So yeah, very, very good list of players there. So thank you for that. That's some great research and some great insight on the history of those players. So appreciate it. Now, what do you have coming up maybe on your other projects, you know, between Big Blue Interactive and Gridiron Uniform Database? I know you talked a little bit about the Uniform Database already, but maybe Big Blue Interactive. What do you have cooking there?
Right now, I'm doing some research. I'm working on an article. I'm going to be writing about the 1990 Giants. So I'm going through the newspaper archives, which is, you know, I love doing. That's always a lot of fun. So I'm kind of going forward a couple of decades. I do most of my research 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. So I'm kind of bringing it forward to 1990, which was a really good year for the Giants. It was kind of like, you know, Bill Parcells last year, and Bill Belichick, you know, went from Super Bowl 25 and then started his head coaching career in Cleveland before he started winning a ton of Super Bowls in New England with that guy who played quarterback who we can't remember.
right.
And I'm doing a lot of research for the Giants media guide. I'm always, you know, I have a contact with the Giants indirectly, and, you know, I sent them the information on Mel Hyde missing a game 2 years ago, and last year with Ray Flaherty with his playing career. He actually, you know, played for the New York Yankees in 1928, and, you know, stuff for the media guide. And, you know, the Gridiron Uniform Database, once the season starts, you know, Bill Schaefer has us on the ball, you know, can you get me a good photo of this? Somebody's wearing a memorial patch or a helmet sticker, or someone, you know, sneaks in an unexpected unit. It's like, I need a picture. I need this. So, you know, it's almost like a full-time job during the season. You know, we do the fun, the old, really old research. That's for the off season. You know, once the preseason starts up through the Super Bowl, it's, you know, keeping on top with what's current. It's the here and now. So it always keeps me busy, but you know, it's a lot of fun. I love doing it.
Well, we appreciate everything you do on both those sites. You know, two great sites. Again, Big Blue Interactive, the New York Giants unofficial site, I guess. I don't think they're officially tied with the Giants, are they? Or is that?
No, we're not. We do hear from some people within the organization every now and then, but it's unofficial. It's independent. You know, Eric Kennedy has been running the site on his own since 1995, and it's the best giant site out there, my unbiased opinion.
Yeah, sometimes those are the best sites because sometimes the franchises themselves don't want you. They only want to give out the information that they want you to know about. They don't want some of the bad to go with that. Or
I know, I hate when they do that.
Right, so you get the full picture, and I think every franchise in the NFL has a few of those sites that are unofficial, but do a great job. So we appreciate you doing that.
That's where you get the unfiltered info.
Right, definitely. And you yourself and Bill Schaefer, as you mentioned, and Tim Brule, you guys are doing an awesome job on Gridiron Uniform Database. I know Bill has let us use some of the older graphics as some of these teams are coming about here recent weeks here. We're putting up some of those, like we had the Detroit Wolverines the other day on. There's some great graphics you guys have, and really makes you live back in that era. Because like you, I love the 1920s and 1930s early pro football and college football. I love that era. So that's awesome. So, all right, Larry, I appreciate your time today and helping us out with these Jersey 79s. And maybe we can sneak in one more here before we get up to 99.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings you sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.